This is a production of Cornell University.
So it is 15. It looks like we've got quite a few attendees, so I'm going to call this meeting to order. We do have a limited amount of time and quite a bit to get through in the agenda, so I'm going to ask that Michelle does maybe roll call through a screenshot so that we can save some time. So I will ask Michelle to do that, and let's get on to the approval of minutes. Hi, Mary. I see that you've logged on. We have April 7th, 2021 minutes. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any dissent? Without any dissent, by unanimous consent, we're going to approve the minutes from April 7th. Moving on to the minutes from April 21st. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes? Michelle has her hand raised, so I get a second. Chrissy's hand is raised. Any dissent? Seeing none, we're going to approve the minutes from April 22nd. So both of those minutes are approved. Moving on to business of the day, I want to welcome Mary Opperman to the Employee Assembly to talk about the fall workplace principles. So Mary, I'm going to turn the floor over to you. I'm going to allow you some time to speak and then hopefully open up the floor for some engagement and questions. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you. So hi, everybody. I hope you're all doing well. I'm going to just give a few opening remarks and then take questions from all of you. So we are in full planning for the fall semester. University has made the decision that teaching will come back and return to the classroom. So with other than those that have always been remote, the classroom teaching will resume, which means that the faculty will resume teaching on campus. Students will resume attending classes on a full-time basis. That change has sort of led the way in terms of how we're thinking about the fall. So let me just say a few things up front. I know that for some people, the working remotely has worked out really well for personal reasons, for professional reasons, and there's a desire on the part of many to keep some level of flexibility. The leadership of the university understands that. At the same time, there is a great deal of concern about the student experience and them having a vibrant campus to return to, and for the faculty to have the support that they need while they're here. So we are taking the approach to fall planning that we are looking at each individual area. Every college dean and vice president will create their own repopulation or full population plan for the fall. But we are focusing primarily on looking by function as to what we need to bring back and when, and then what impact that will have on people's jobs. Many of you have asked about flexible and hybrid work. And as has always been the case, we've always had flexible and hybrid work, and has always been the case that those requests will move through each college and unit. So I'm just going to stop there and open it up for questions.
Thank you, Mary. So what I'm going to ask everybody do is please raise your hand using the functionality of the reactions, or physically raise your hand, and I'm going to try to review all the squares to get to you all. I see Jamie's hand is raised, then Michelle's hand is raised, so I'm going to pass the floor to Jamie first, then Michelle.
Thanks. Hey, thank you, Mary, for stopping by. I was just wondering if university is providing guidance to those units and deans as far as specifically for staff positions that don't have a student-facing component. I know the desire to create a vibrant campus experience for the students is important, but for those staff that don't have a student-facing role, is there any guidance being provided to maybe make more leeway for remote work for those people, or?
So that's what we're doing right now. So we're meeting collectively, the business officers and HR officers, and going through each function, Jamie. And so that we can hear from each other about how we're thinking about this. But I do want to take a step back and just say, it isn't just the student facing roles. It's also the support roles for instruction and for the faculty and for research that have heavy on-campus expectations. So yes, that's exactly what we're doing right now. And hopefully we'll get to, I will say that I think some of us may take slightly different approaches than others. And we talked about that, but you know, there are some units, CIT is one, actually HR is another, that are interested in looking at different kinds of workforce strategies. And we agreed, the president and provost agreed, that we would deal with the differences as a way to have each leader figure out the best way to maximize their staff productivity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. So it looks like Jamie asked Michelle's question, so I'm going to move on to Andrea.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for coming and joining us today. As I think you're aware, this has been a point of contention and discussion and concern from folks at the Disability Colleague Network Group. It's been something that for some people, due to the nature and or significance of their disabilities, the accommodation process has certainly been easier to facilitate working at home. In more central aspects of HR through medical leaves and otherwise facilitate the accommodation process. See any other that will address the issue of individuals with disabilities within the context of this?
Yeah, Andrea, it's a great question. So let me step back. First of all, the accommodation process is the right process for people who have either a medical or religious accommodation need that may impact their ability to be on the campus. So that is the right approach, but I wanna step back and actually answer your question a little more broadly, if that's okay. Beyond the medically or religiously necessitated accommodations, we do know that we have people who are really reluctant to return to a sort of a group setting, if you will. And those are, they may or may not have disabilities, they may or may not have religious accommodation issues, that we just broadly have a population of people who have been fully remote and are really trying to find a comfort level with coming back onto the campus. And I think the first thing that's important is to acknowledge that that's a understandable and normal reaction for people. And what we're trying to do now is make a bit clearer all of the health and safety accommodations that have been made to have the workspaces be as safe as possible, so that we can answer questions about cleaning and air filtration systems and distancing and masking, so that we can answer some of those questions for everyone. But for those who have disabilities, they should, I would say they should first talk with medical leaves about the potential for an accommodation. And then if not, you know, use the flexibility request process to see if they can do their work in a more flexible way.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Mary. Let's move on to Brandon, Ellen, then Brian. Brandon?
Thank you, Hey. And thank you, Mary, for being here. I've asked this question a number of times, but I think in light of the recent statistics that the United States is looking at when it comes to vaccine percentages and herd immunity, and many experts saying that it won't happen in the United States. I know we have a leg up on that, if you will, because we have a requirement of our students. So there is that aspect that will help us to get to a higher level. But I think that many folks have the same concern that as we look at our staff from medical, religious, and those who choose not to get vaccinated, that reaching that herd immunity level might be challenging. And I've asked this of President Pollack as well. Is there a date that has been sort of earmarked as this is our date at which we need to make a decision here as to whether or not we move into requirement of staff? Because in order to reach that herd immunity for that semester, which I so greatly want, I want to be on campus. I want everyone on campus. I want students on campus. We want to be in our dining halls and not have to have lines out the door with limited buffet service, a lot of staff, students and staff just not getting the service they need. How are you looking at that timeline?
Yeah, it's a great question, Brandon. It's a big decision that not just we, but many others have not addressed yet, which is the decision to make a vaccine mandatory. A, we would have to bargain that with our unions. I'm not sure that we would get the kind of support for that we might in other settings. So that has to be discussed. And I'll tell you, my concern is on both sides of this issue, right? I had obviously a very optimistic view. I believe that our campus would look at the science, listen to the health folks. And I said pretty loudly to the president and provost, I didn't think we would need to mandate it because I expected that people would realize that for us to remain, you know, a vibrant university, we need people on campus and they need to be safe and they should be safe in all their, all aspects of their lives. But it is the case that we still have a population that has been very hesitant to get the vaccine. So it may come to a point where if we can't get better, and we're doing great in the faculty and actually really good in the students, but the staff numbers are a little disappointing. So we may come to all of you to help us with that. I generally believe that if you give adults the data and information that they do the right thing. So far, I'm not sure that we've reached as many people as we had hoped. So if we don't, then the issue will have to be addressed of whether to make it mandatory.
Thank you, Mary. I appreciate that. And I did reach out to you about some ideas around some campaigns that address, as opposed to hesitancy, confidence and things that we can do to promote the science as opposed to why aren't you doing this?
Exactly.
Here are the great reasons too, and I appreciate your approach there. Thank you.
Yeah, and actually we're looking at creating some venues where people can ask their questions without feeling judged and have a medical person answer those questions. I did raise up the sort of the flagpole, the idea of incentives to get people vaccinated, but there was no support for that. People really felt that individuals should get a vaccine because they think it's the best thing for them and their families, and not to get an additional amount of money. Or we really believe that that's not really the way to get people to make an informed decision. So that didn't get any, we talked about it, but there was very little support, not really for the incentive itself, but more for the messaging that it seemed to send. So I think information is probably our, in giving people a place to ask their questions. We had really hoped that if we did the vaccine clinics on campus, that for those that were reluctant, they would take the vaccine because the clinic was on campus, but that hasn't turned out to be the case. We also thought if we got the one dose, that we would have more people interested in the one dose. That also hasn't seemed to be the case. So it's a struggle, but thanks for asking it.
Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Mary. Ellen, Brian, I have a question, then Aubrey.
Hello, Mary. I have not really a question, but more of a suggestion. Those of us that have been primarily working remotely this entire time, over a year now, we'll be returning to a completely different campus. Like, things are running. They've been going on without us, but in a very different way. And so my recommendation is almost like a user guide for employees returning to campus, because I'm concerned about things such as like parking lots, and will the daily decision lots continue? Do I need to renew my parking pass? What dining halls are open? Do we have to, you know, reserve them online before we can go? How does that process work? Like, I recently tried to go to the Cornell store on campus, and I was actually turned away, and they had me like go to a back entrance because I didn't know the rules. Like, I didn't know that I had to have like my daily check and things because I haven't been on campus. So everything's just kind of going on, and they have a system in place, but we don't know what that system is. So yeah. I would love like a handy like user guide, like reference to how to operate on campus going forward.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And you know, there's a couple things I guess I'll just say, and I don't think I need to tell all of you this. The population of us who have been trying to get us through the pandemic and now back to campus are pretty worn down. So you should always feel free not only to create a suggestion, but also to offer some assistance, because I think we're missing a lot out of, honestly, kind of exhaustion and being pulled in so many directions. So love the ideas and always happy for some help, but that's a great, great idea.
And Mary, I also wanted to offer, we do have, you know, the EA Voice newsletter that goes out monthly. We'll have one coming out in a couple weeks from May, and another one coming out in June. So if we can help promote vaccination to staff or provide any resources for this kind of reentry information, please let us know. We're happy to include that.
Wonderful. Thank you. That's a great point. I'll add that too.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Mary. Moving on to Brian.
I lost him.
You're on mute, Brian.
I hit that thing once. It just automatically muted on me. What the heck? You took away most of my thunder, Ellen. That was some of the stuff I was going to ask. But also, I'm getting a lot of constituents, Mary. Thank you for joining us, by the way. Asking about childcare and the needs of that. If we're still in a hybrid remote learning situation, that's going to deter from us opening our opening capacity. So I was hoping you'd speak on that and what we're looking at there. I know I've heard it from many constituents and people in different groups.
So let me make sure I understand your question. So by the fall, we will not be hybrid. We'll be fully on campus. But I think that the underlying question that you are asking is an important one. We lost a lot of childcare. It is starting to come back. So we hope by fall, either they will have reopened or the daycare council is trying to, we've helped support some of their efforts to try to get new family care providers certified. So we're hoping that we'll have a greater store of childcare to refer people to. So I think it's a shorter term. It is an issue. I mean, it was an issue actually before the pandemic, but it's a bigger issue now. So I'm hoping by the time fall comes around, the schools will be back regularly to, so school-age children will be going back on a regular schedule again. But we're aware of that. So, you know, short-term issues will be dealt with hopefully well, as they usually are, until they can be taken care of. So in the fall planning, these short-term issues will have to be addressed, and they may be addressed in a short-term way until those matters get resolved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mary. I have a question, and it's more of commentary, maybe a suggestion, and also a little bit of a question. A lot of the feedback I've been hearing from the staff have been appreciation for senior leadership for being so transparent and throughout this entire COVID, you know, year and more so. There's just been a lot of open communication about why, you know, senior leadership is doing what they're doing and the science behind it, and that's been greatly appreciated. After the announcement that the students were going to return in the fall, I think there was some ambiguity around staff and how that return would look. And so I think maybe certain units and colleges have been giving some instruction. And so I think there's been a lot of staff confusion around what reactivation looks like. And it sounds like senior leadership, we know, is coming up with a rubric, you know, reviewing different functionality, I mean, different functions to kind of determine where, you know, certain functions would lie within working remotely or working fully at home or some sort of hybrid model. Is there going to be any sort of announcement broadly to the staff to say, you know, here are the next steps, we're working on it, please be patient with us? Or is that something that we're thinking the deans and the unit leaders are supposed to communicate to staff? Because I think within this space, before something is announced, there is a lot of uncertainty. And I think some staff would probably appreciate some more clarity around maybe this process that's happening. So I think that's just the feedback I wanted to sort of convey and get your opinion on.
Yep. So we are working on these fall planning principles. They're out with the deans right now. I'm getting feedback. When they're done, the provost and probably I will send them to the whole campus. They do want to be really clear, hey, they won't have much in regard to flexible work arrangements other than a notation that it can be, that it's being handled at the college and unit level. Because some of us are just taking very different approaches than others, but that is the intention to have that out, you know, probably in the next, you know, week or so. Feedback is dribbling in slowly. We had one set of principles that were rejected by the deans. They just weren't, they sort of weren't in the direction that they had hoped. So we redrafted them and they're looking at these now. But they're basically what I just said to you. But they'll be, we'll be able to share them with the whole campus.
Thank you. Aubrey, I think Jessica had her hand raised, but I see it is down now. And then Beth. So first, let's start with Aubrey.
Hi, Mary. It's nice to see you.
Hi.
Hi. So just to piggyback on what Hey mentioned, I will agree that there does definitely seems to be some confusion and just breaks in communication, possibly. Being co-chair for the Disability Colleague Network Group, you know, everything that Andrea mentioned earlier, there's a lot of individuals that have a lot of concerns about returning to campus, and some individuals feel that they, you know, disability aside, are able to serve their customers more efficiently. For instance, our sessions, we've more than doubled attendance remotely, and there could be many factors related to that. But one of the things, in addition to what Hey was saying, just to take that a step further, because it's up to a lot of the departments, we're hearing that there's a lot of discrepancies in terms of communication, conversations. Is there going to be a standardized approach that you're aware of or a recommendation? Some departments seem to be having a lot of conversations and some haven't had any at all. So it's, I think the not knowing is leading to a lot of stress and uncertainty.
Yeah, Aubrey, these are all terrific questions, and I'll go back to what I said before. So I hear you completely. Returning has been more challenging than going out, in part because the people who are doing this are the same people that took us out and the same people that manage testing and the same people that are managing vaccines and now commencement. So it's been very difficult to get ahead of the communication on this. As well, the New York State guidance keeps changing. So every time we think we have an approach, the state changes it. The bottom line here, and this is what we will be sending out in the principles that will come out likely from the provost, is that we will be returning to a campus-based fall. And what that means is that those who would like to be able to work partially or fully remotely will work through their college or unit to determine whether that's possible. I hear the concerns, I've read the survey. I know that in many cases, the preference that people have is not to have to return. But the leaders of the campus believe that to return to full campus operations and the vibrancy needed, that they want to start with the expectation that the campus will be largely populated. And then those of us, so you happen to know in HR, we're looking at a different model. We will do that, recognizing that we will be present when needed for things on campus. IT is looking at a different model, but many of the colleges are really taking a fall approach. This is not a forever, the fall approach that they want people to plan to come back, unless there is a reason that they can't, or unless they determine together that the work, to your point, is done at least as well from home. And that's so because we're not dictating that and cascading one model down, it is very confusing, not just to the staff, but to the, you know, leaders that are trying to make these decisions. So we've started to meet, we're going through the functions together, and as soon as we have information, we'll share it. It does feel very confusing and scary for people. I just want to remind you, it just turned May. We've done all of this stuff in sort of a just-in-time way. I realize that it's, you know, very frustrating, but we're doing it as I'm going as fast as I can. And I recognize it would be much easier for all of you if this was clearer, but we're getting there.
Thank you, Aubrey. Thank you, Mary. Beth Koontz.
Thank you. Hey. And thank you, Mary, for being here. I appreciate this. It's been helpful to hear because obviously there are lots of different rumors going around. So you've been very helpful and thank you. And thank you. I know you need about a year's worth of sleep, probably, you and the administration. My concern actually has to do more with, because you answered my questions that I had around returning to work, but my concern is we're hearing from very high levels that we will have visitors on campus. And I, as an admissions professional, am expected to work with visitors and be in close proximity to them. And there has been, to our knowledge, and by our, I mean many of us that work in admissions, no planning, no discussions about safety, health concerns, you name it. So do you have any information you can share on that? Because I feel like I want to be back at work, but I don't necessarily want to be working with people from around the world, literally.
Right. So I think, Beth, you've just raised the central issue for most people in the world right now. What is safe if everyone is not vaccinated? Or we can't know if everyone is vaccinated. Right. So even within the university, that's, you know, being able to figure out how to use, whether you can even know the data and then how to use it, is still an emerging area. We haven't gotten guidance from the CDC yet on that. So what I can tell you is what we know, which is if you wear your mask and you stay physically distant, right now that's still at 6 feet. Your risk of transmission is very low. Transmission occurs almost always when you take your mask off. So risk of transmission occurs mostly in gatherings where food and drink are involved. And so if you, and I've been on campus off and on the whole time, as have a number of other people. And I see, I will tell you, all the positives. My whole house has decided to be loud right now. Hang on just 1 second while I get my dog.
Come in here. That's no. You sit down and be quiet. Sit down.
Now he's gonna pout. And so I can tell you that in almost every case, the positives have come from two things, travel and gatherings. From the start of this pandemic, because why? Because when we travel, we tend to pull our masks down when we're with people we haven't been bubbled with. And in gatherings, we eat. It's when the mask comes down, and if someone else has the virus, that it's likely to come into, we're likely to come in contact with it. So the safety guidelines really don't change very much. We still, and you know, I'm fine saying I'm fully vaccinated, and I wear my mask all the time. And I don't eat with people that are not in my bubble yet. I'm not ready to do that. So that's the best safety measure. So seeing people from, I think the concerns around the people who come from other countries is understandable. Their vaccine rates are much lower, but those are the very best guidelines I can give.
So it sounds like campus will be open to visitors.
Yes, I think that is eventually going to be true. I mean, look, I hear you, but eventually we have to come back, or we're going to succumb to the problems that other places that did not. We are all dependent on being fully occupied. And part of that is being here for people who come. So, but again, Beth, this is all still emerging. So whether we can know that somebody's vaccinated, ask that they be vaccinated, all still working its way through the CDC.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Mary. I want to be mindful of your time, Mary. I believe we only had you until 12:45, but we have two additional questions. So do you have time for two additional questions?
I'm going to tell you in 1 minute. I do.
All right. Thank you so much. So we're going to go with Jamie, then Marin. Jamie.
Thanks again, Mary. I just had a question about with the knowing about vaccinations. Is the campus talking about using the Excelsior pass that New York State is promoting and heavily pushing?
So we haven't yet. We've talked about it for commencement, for the guests coming for commencement. We haven't yet because we have the daily check. So the information can go confidentially into the daily check. Much of whether we use the Excelsior pass is whether or not we will be permitted to know and or ask that someone show us their vaccine status. And that is still an unclear area, whether or not that information is private. So we've been collecting the vaccine data just to see whether we're reaching a certain percentage. We're not, you know, diving into it individually. Having it on your phone, which, by the way, if you haven't done it, you should do it so that when you travel, you don't carry your card, because that card, if you lose that card, you don't have that card, is a really good thing to have. But until we know how we would use the vaccine information, Jamie, I'm not sure that we would require it.
Right, just thinking for visitors to touch on the concerns that people have about visitors on campus who are not part of daily check.
Yeah, so as you know, Excelsior is only for New York. You can only use it if you're a New York resident. But again, it would be great if we knew that we could ask for it. And that's the part we're still trying to, this is all emerging. The health privacy issues, the regulations from the CDC are still changing. So it's definitely out there as a possibility.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Mary. Marin?
So I feel like I would break a streak if I didn't say thank you as well, Mary, for your time, but I actually do mean it. So thank you for the time today and for staying for a little bit longer for my question and Jamie's as well. So this is kind of separate from, you know, whether we physically are on campus, but the act of being off campus has actually allowed both me personally, and I think from some of the staff that I that are with me down at Cornell Tech and on some of the people who are further away from campus to begin with, to really participate in Central Cornell programming in ways that was just not possible before. I was wondering if you could share, as Obviously, all of this documentation is still very much in flux, but if there's been any thought to offering, rather than, or in addition to guidance about returning to campus physically, but operational guidance on encouraging, you know, units to offer maybe wellness programming or seminars or things virtually to allow for us to continue that, to develop the connections between our campuses, and to continue to allow non-Ithaca-based staff to participate more fully in Ithaca-based activities.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, I certainly, when we went out, I thought, oh, you know, what a terrible time to be talking with people through, you know, a webinar, how impersonal, and actually got the exact opposite feedback. People said, this is much easier. It feels more level. I feel like I have the ability to participate regardless of whether I, you know, don't turn my camera on because I'm multitasking, but I can keep one ear open, or I would never be able to go because I'm at Cornell Tech or I'm remote for eCornell or any number of other things. So at a minimum, I think the leadership has learned that webinar-based programming is very effective. Even if we did webinar-based programming and had people in person, it would allow for a more level playing field. So that is the hope, that we will be able to be a little bit more, I mean, that's just my own learning. I have to say, I don't think I would ever go back to, if you can make it in your 42-minute lunch break, that would be great. Otherwise, sorry. I think we would probably, keep much of that. I just want to say to Aubrey's point too, there are very mixed views about Zoom. I just have to tell you, not everybody thinks it's the solution that others think. And I think part of that is because the way we have used Zoom is there are some people who do nothing but Zoom meetings day after day, hour after hour. They're pretty burnt out from them. But others have said, you know, Zoom is just much easier for me. And so I don't know the extent to which we will bounce and then bounce back. Like in you know, in our case in HR, you know, we'll keep using Zoom, whether we also do things in person, because we have people in New York who can't come any other way. But I just think it'll be interesting to see. So sort of like a social experiment. There are colleagues who say, I am not going to have, as soon as we don't have to, I'm not having any more meetings by Zoom. And I have other colleagues who say, I would never go back to all, you know, to an in only in-person meetings. So I think the Zoom controversy will happen for a while, and I'll be interested to see how it all plays out. And I do think, to your point, CIT is doing a terrific job looking at, Aubrey just said, hybrid opportunities, and they're doing a great job looking at kind of the best technology to use in different models, hybrid models and the like. And they've got some great stuff they're rolling out.
Thank you, Marin. Thank you, Mary. So I don't see any additional questions. I wanna say, Mary, you have been a tremendous, you know, source of information and help here to the Employee Assembly this entire year. I really appreciate the partnership that we've built, and I'm hoping that moving forward, once the workplace principles get publicized, that there'll be an opportunity for a staff forum. I'm sure you'll probably hear all of these all over again, but I think it'll be really helpful to clarify for the broader staff community. And if there are any resources or information you want us to share via the newsletter or our own channels, then feel free to reach out to us and share that so that we can, you know, help publicize that information. With that, again, just a lot of gratitude to you and other members of senior leadership for being here, being front-facing and willing to take on some of these questions that I know are difficult.
Well, it's always hard to keep saying, I don't know. And as I've said to everybody, you know, I'll be a lot better the next pandemic. But I do think that an open forum is needed. And even though I think there will be some things that we can't answer, I think being able to ask questions at least helps people know that that's been chronicled. So I'm happy to do that. We should have those print. We thought we were going to have them out before, but I had to go back to the drawing board. So I think we should have them out soon, and then we should be able to get out to an open forum or two as you all see fit. Absolutely. Thank you all. You've been just terrific partners throughout all of this. And anyone who'd like to work on commencement, please let me know, since apparently the state thinks it's funny to just keep changing the guidelines every 2 weeks, but we've got a lot of work ahead of us. So if you're always wondered what it'd be like to help out with commencement, this would be a good year. Take good care, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. So I want to thank you all for your engagement and all the great questions that you've asked. I think it's so helpful when, you know, we come prepared to engage in conversation when we have presenters. So I think that was a pretty productive conversation with Mary about the workplace principles, even though there are a lot of unknowns. I want to move on to the business of the day, the finance forum update. I know that we've been talking quite a bit about a finance forum update. We've been sort of promising this on the horizon for a couple of I think weeks, months now, but we're finally able to get on Joanne's, DiStefano, and Paul Streeter's calendar for June 8th. We're going to do this around the normal time, which is 11:45 to 1 p.m. So we're going to have them come and provide a snapshot of fiscal year 21, how we did versus the projections that we had initially had for the budget. And I'm hoping that that'll be a productive conversation. This does fall in the purview of the next employee assembly, team. But I think since a lot of the work that we've done here, it has been around these staff forums, and this is something we've been talking about, I felt comfortable proceeding with that date, and we'll work with the new executive team to kind of figure out what that looks like in terms of who's moderating and who's asking questions. But I wanted to, book that date so that we could have that finance forum for the staff, since I think there are going to be a lot of questions. And as you heard from Mary, it sounds like after the workplace principles are published, I would like to have another staff forum to kind of talk through that. I really feel like there will be a lot of questions, especially around mitigating certain circumstances where maybe the broad principles may not apply all that thoroughly in certain instances. So that is on the horizon. I wanted to give you guys an update on that. Do you have any questions about the finance forum update or concerns about it? I'm looking for any hands raised. Seeing none, let's move on to Ellen Miller, Resolution 10, revising and renaming the Opperman Award. Ellen?
Hello again, everyone. Today we are presenting Resolution 10, as Hey said, for your consideration. As you, most of you should know, we have been working on revising the Opperman Award for actually a couple of years now, and we are ready to take action and to get it off the ground. Following the success of the relaunch of the George Peter Award, we're just excited to keep the momentum going and move forward with the Opperman Award. So what this resolution does is it renames the Opperman Award from the Opperman Award for Staff Advocacy to the Award for Staff Integrity and Inclusion. It removes the Opperman name from the award, which was by request of Mary Opperman, but also just by design to reflect the broader meaning behind the award for Staff Integrity and Inclusion. In addition, it updates the selection criteria the following. It will be selection criteria for the new award will be communicating between differences in order to build a collaborative, inclusive, and respectful community that engages everyone, no matter their background. Consistent, strong moral principles that coincide with the university's vision. Honest and trustworthy while demonstrating and adhering to high standards of personal conduct. Demonstrating commitment to encouraging, advocating for, and supporting staff excellence with leadership while being an advocate for work-life balance, flexible work arrangements, and promoting developmental opportunities.
have a consistent positive attitude that see changes or challenges as opportunities and helps others to see things from that perspective. In addition to the criteria, we are updating the eligibility for the award. Historically, the Opperman Award was eligible to all Cornell staff, faculty, and academic professionals. However, we have revised that to align more with the Employee Assembly's broader mission and to align with the criteria that we've established for our other awards. So it will redefine that staff eligibility to include all exempt and non-exempt Cornell staff members. So it will no longer be open to faculty or academic professionals. While the eligibility will be for staff only, we have redefined the nominator eligibility to be any Cornell employee. So any employee can nominate a staff member for the award. I think that covers the main points of what we are changing and establishing here with this award. So that is what the resolution represents. And in the addendum is the background and overview of the award. And we also have available in the box our current rubric for the award, which as with the George Peter Award, the resolution does also confirm that Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee will have the authority to, adjust those details as needed as far as the rubric and scoring and those plans. So with that said, are there any questions related to this resolution or the new award that we are proposing?
I'm opening up the floor for questions. Does anybody have any questions? Does anybody want to make a motion? Michelle, your hand is raised.
Sure. I move to vote on this resolution. I think it's fantastic. And a lot of time was spent by Ellen and the communications team to really carefully vet renaming of this award, and I think it's a fantastic resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Brian, your hand is raised. Is this to second the motion to vote, or?
I'm in agreement with Michelle and second the motion.
All right, so I'm going to ask all voting members of the current EA to use the reactions button to vote. So please, check yes if you want to vote yes for this. And I'm going to ask Michelle to count the votes. So this is just for yeses of the current EA body who is voting yes to approve. Kate, I see a thumbs up. Is that a green check mark yes, or is that?
It is. I don't have a green check mark under my reactions. I must be out of date with my Zoom.
So just for current.
Yeah.
Members. Okay. So I had 16, but I think Marcus, I'm not. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. That's getting a little.
All right. So it sounds like there are 16 yeses. That's my count as well. Are there any no's? So use the X mark no if you would like to vote no on this resolution. I see none. Are there any abstentions? Please type that into the chat. So right now we have a vote of 16 yeses, 0 no's, 0 abstentions. With that, this resolution passes. Thank you so much, Ellen, for all your hard work on this. And I'm really glad that we'll be able to move forward with this. Thank you, Ellen.
And I would just like to quickly say, since she is present in the meeting today, our Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee member, Kristen Sifferi, she has been outstanding with all of the work that she has put in. Thank you for turning on your camera. We would not have been able to get as far as we have with this without her hard work on that. So I really appreciate that. Thank you very much for spearheading that, Kristen.
Very welcome. Glad to get it going again.
Thank you. Moving on to committee reports, I'm going to forward the floor over to Michelle for the executive committee report.
Okay. So we met on the 15th of April, and we discussed this upcoming agenda. We discussed the return to work, and I think we spent a lot of time on the mulling over the parking situation and trying to figure out a way that maybe we can inform the powers that be that that maybe parking should change for incoming in the fall, but we don't know how that looks. So that's probably something the new assembly, we can tackle that issue. We discussed the employee assembly visibility and the current election. And, you know, we kind of thought maybe that there was a lot of Zoom fatigue from folks and competing interests. So the election might not have been as robust as if we were in person on campus and able to interact with our peers face-to-face and sort of really tout the good work of the employee assembly. We discussed summer engagement for these vacant seats and how we can work to get folks interested in joining those vacant seats through the summer months. I brought up the PSAC survey. If anyone had a chance to join the webinar that they had this morning, there was a lot of information that was shared from the survey and then from the working groups. So if you wanted to get any additional information about the public safety survey and the sort of the campus climate around campus safety, check out their website. There's a lot of really, really good data in there to understand where faculty, staff, and students are on campus safety. And then we also talked about the Employee Assembly Liaison annual update. And we are probably gonna have that update on May 19th on our next meeting. So every liaison to other assembly groups on campus that report, that are on the Employee Assembly and report to us will expect an annual report on what they've seen and heard from those organizations. And that is about the bulk of the discussion.
Thank you, Michelle. Are there any questions? I'm looking for any hands raised and seeing none. Let's move on to Communications and Awards Committee. Ellen?
So I completely forgot that I also had to give a committee report. I was focused on the resolution. Let me pull up my my notes quickly. Sorry. here we go. So I mean, we have just been moving full steam ahead. Our main focus recently has been on the staff awards and recognition. And I think I mentioned in our last meeting, we received a total of 23 nominations for the George Peter Award. And we have a subcommittee who's currently reviewing those nominations now. And we will be voting, they will be determining the top three candidates of that 23 nominee pool. And we'll be voting on them at our next committee meeting, which will be on May 11th. And so we'll have a winner at that point, and we'll be working with the nominating unit to decide how to proceed as far as publicizing that information and celebrating the awardee. It is a very historically, it's been a very prestigious award, so we want to make sure that the whole package that goes along with that, as far as the celebration event and the announcement of the winner, is really well planned and well executed. So we're looking forward to that. And then you know, the award for staff integrity and inclusion was top on our agenda. And thank you all for helping us get that resolution passed today, so we can move forward with the next steps for that. And I mean, that's been pretty much the forefront of our recent discussions. We have also for our May 11th meeting, we have the voting for the George Peter nominees, but then we also have under new business we received some really great ideas from some of the committee members as far as communications and outreach and how we can really get the EA name out there and relaunched and rebranded and in the forefront. So we're going to be brainstorming that at our next meeting and basically planning, making a plan of action for the next term. And that's that.
Thank you, Ellen. I'm going to open the floor up for questions. I have a quick question. What are the top three candidates for the George Peter Award right now? Or are there any nominees that you want to highlight that you thought were pretty outstanding?
No, so we don't have them now. We have established a subcommittee within the communications committee that is focusing solely on staff awards and recognition, and they are working currently through those 23 nominations, ranking them based on the rubric, and we will know at our May 11th meeting who the top three candidates are. So we don't have that information to share today.
Thanks. Are there any that stood out to you?
Oh my God, all of them. I like, seriously, as they were coming in, I was reading them and amazing. Like, we have just like, the Cornell campus is just full of really outstanding employees, and I wish that we could give them all an award. So it's going to be a really tough decision. There's none that I want to call out specifically at this point, but really all of the nominations were very strong, and I hope that we can maybe think of some other ways to recognize them as well.
Thank you, Ellen. Any other questions for Ellen, the communications committee? Seeing no hands raised, let's move on to Jessica Withers with the education committee.
Okay, so we had our last meeting, we had reports on some of our fact-finding initiatives that came about because of the priorities poll last fall. We heard Emily, who I don't think is here, gave us an update on the School of Continuing Ed's numbers for fall and spring, or for staff enrollment in their courses. Overall, numbers were a little low for them in fall and spring. Summer and winter numbers were about what they usually are for staff participation, but overall, really, if you look at the total numbers, staff are on the low end of taking School of Continuing Ed courses. Another report we had was on educational benefits at peer institutions, and Mary Newhart and Ari gave us a presentation on research that they did. It was very fascinating. Just two things that jumped out at us, and we have not drawn any conclusions or made anything other than just gathering this information right now. Cornell and Penn are the only two that offer something like the employee degree program to staff. The other thing was Cornell comes in on the low end of maximum tuition aid allowed per calendar year. Some of our peer institutions have a maximum threshold that's much higher than Cornell's. So those were just two interesting facts. We've got one more meeting that'll be this week, and we're gonna have a discussion about accessibility and educational benefits at Cornell. Aubrey and Andrea are going to join us to help just start a conversation about that, and then we'll wrap up and put our hopes and dreams out there for next terms committee.
Thank you, Jessica. Are there any questions? Seeing none, let's move on to Christine Mahoney with the Welfare Committee. Thank you. Seeing no questions, let's move on to Christine Mahoney with the Welfare Committee.
Christy had to leave for another meeting at 1 today. I was not at the last meeting. I don't know if anybody else has an update.
In the interest of time, I'll ask Christy to email us with an update. We can move on to the Benefits and Policy Committee with Brian Goodell.
Yeah, I'm still here. All right, I was hoping I'd get an update from the Welfare Committee because I missed the last meeting as well. So the BPC met and we conquered a lot, I think. We talked about having a meeting with Alexis Brubaker and it didn't happen this time, but the next one, to do a Q&A and a presentation on university policy that she works with. We continued follow-up discussion on the EA retreat and the priorities poll, moving forward in the webinar form, some of the things that we brought up that we would like to see continue on with the next committee at the next meeting. We continued discussion on an email that's hey sent saying extending and allowing certain number of days of vacation leave with Mary Opperman. So we discussed that a little bit. The deadline is the 15th. People do need to use their vacation. Because that's something that they really emphasize that people aren't using and they still need to have time off. We continued discussion from the last meeting on staff being forced to use their time and when they didn't want to. It led us into a really busy discussion and a vibrant discussion just a sec, let me get to my note part. About remote work and what is allowed and what is not allowed. And again, there was discrepancies from unit to unit and how time off and remote work would be administered. Some of those questions were answered today, so that was appreciated, Mary. There was much discussion on the use of HAP and how we use it and how that's being utilized and the policies around that. There was more discussion on policy and how it was administered and from supervisor to supervisor and if there should be a unilateral approach from HR and central administration on that. The group had a large discussion on that and it was really vibrant. New business, we talked about an email that we received from somebody and I went over how to get a resolution passed through the EA with them. We were hoping that they bring their what they had in mind back, but I haven't heard nothing. So that kind of is just there. But there's good stuff in the notes as far as if somebody wants to bring a resolution forward in the committee level, how to do that. Other than that, that was it. I did follow up. One of the things that I thought about for the next VPC, and I think it'd be instrumental and vital, is that recommending that we have somebody there that has more familiarity with labor, employee labor relations, policy management, and benefits specialists. We have three different groups, I think, of OHR, labor, employee relations, and the compliance office with the policy, and a benefits specialist. If we had one person from one of those groups that represented them groups at each of our meetings, I think it would stop a lot of the guesswork that we perform now and the fact finding that we perform now during our committee because we don't have somebody with expertise. And so I put out a call to OHR labor, employee labor relations, and they liked that too. They thought it'd be good to have somebody there that has some background in these policy decisions. And they're bringing it back and forth. They're going to the different groups. And Lauren Jacoby is bringing it forward. And they're going to talk to all the players and see if that's possible, that they can have somebody at our committee meetings each time to help represent OHR in that capacity. So I think that'd be good if they could have somebody there in an ex officio capacity to help us out, so we're not reinventing the wheel per se. Other than that, that's all I have. Any questions?
Thank you, Brian. Questions? I'm looking for any hands raised.
You do have a couple comments in the chat, Brian, if you want.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't looking at the chat.
I think Joe's question may actually be a Jessica question.
Yeah, I hope so, because I can't answer that. I do not know.
And then Aubrey just offering her assistance with benefits. So take note of her name.
Thank you, Aubrey.
And I can say, I don't know off the top of my head, Joe, I think that came up in our staff forum in January on educational benefits, and there is a recording and a transcription. I can look through that, or you can, but I'm pretty sure it came up there.
Thank you. Moving on to Nassar with the Elections Committee.
Nassar had to step out, but he asked me to share that we have not met and there is no update.
Thank you. So we only have 10 minutes left and we have to actually go into closed executive session to seat the new members. So members of the new employee assembly body, so that includes Derek and Marcy and Marcus, we have to vote on the new executive team and UA rep. So I'm going to ask that we essentially adjourn our meeting and then start a new meeting. In this closed meeting, we're going to do the votes for this this coming executive team. So Gina, do you have any guidance on how we would go into closed executive session via Zoom?
I think you just ask people who are not in the executive session to sign off. So those folks that are not part of the new assembly. Otherwise, we would have to shut down and log back in. So I think that you've just asked for if there's a motion to adjourn, and then you would just reconvene.
All right.
Yeah. So to clarify, if your seat is not continuing, if your seat is expiring, you should leave. Basically, right?
Yeah. So I see. Parko's hand is raised and Brian's hand is raised. Michelle?
Oh, I just want to make a motion to adjourn. And
motion to adjourn, Brian?
So I will second that, because I put my hand up to say a motion to adjourn, but I also
would like to say
before we adjourn and go to the next level, I really appreciate everybody that was here and put their time in, and I just want to send out my appreciation for that.
Thank you. All right. So I'm adjourning this meeting, but please stay on if you're part of the new employee assembly body, as we will be voting. So if you're not a new member of the employee assembly for this upcoming year, please leave.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.